Good morning. Today's Daf Anidas Chavav. We are on Chavei Amud Beis, and we're going to start with the sugya of Sandal. Mapel Sandal. Woman miscarried and she gave birth to Sandal. So we're in the third parak of the Masechta. Our discussion has been revolving around a woman having given birth, and Rachmanus, the birth that came out, it does not exactly look like a defined human being. And the question becomes a simple halacha question from our Mishnah standpoint, from our Perek standpoint, and that is whether or not she's going to be tamei tumas leida. That's the only issue that we've been dealing with in the course of this Perek. So up until now, we talked about undefined items coming out of her. So the first topic of this Perek has been an undefined mass. It's just simply a biological matter came out of her, but it was in a solid form. And so that was our first discussion. And then from there going forward, we talked about where it started to have some definition, but it's just a question of what does it look like? What exactly is the definition? And so that has been our topic. Yesterday we spoke a lot about an embryo. And an embryo obviously has very little definition. And we spoke in yesterday's Gemara exactly what would be the characteristics of an embryo that would render her to be tamei tumas leida. And so we're going to continue now with Sandal. Now, Sandal came up in the Mishnah. Mishnah recorded a number of things where if she gave birth to it, she's going to be tamei tumas leida, and one of those things is a Sandal. Sandal Nesholia. We're going to be talking today, two topics for today's daf. One is going to be the Sandal, the other is the Sholia. What is a Sandal? So a Sandal, if you look back in the Rashi, back in the Mishnah, ain't Sandal below Vlad, Acher. So here's what we assume whenever we see a Sandal. We'll try to give description of it in just a moment, but just fundamentally, or principally. When you see a sandal coming out of the woman, so it is an undefined mass, but here's the assumption. There's going to be another baby with it, i.e. it's multiples, it's twins. Uvishvil sandal teshev lezachal nekeva. Now, for the sandal, you're going to have to be mitamei tumas leida. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, which I hope you're wondering, and that is if there's a twin that came out with it, so she's going to be tamei tumas leida via the twin. Anyway. So what difference does it make whether or not the sandal is tamei tumas leida? So we're going to get, the Gemara is going to ask that question. It's an obvious question, and we're going to get there. And Rashi writes back in the Mishnah, "Desafik zachar safik nekevahu." Now we don't know, the sandal is so undefined, we don't know if it's male or female. "Vim avlad achar nekeva ina sandal lo mala v'lo morid." Now Rashi back in the Mishnah said that if its twin is a female, so then you pretty much have everything covered. Because for the female, now you're going to go the maximum of 80 days of Tumah Tahara for the woman. And so what is the sandal going to add and contribute? It's funny that Rashi says that back in the Mishnah, because in just a moment, we're going to answer that question. Meaning even if the viable baby was a female, still the sandal can make a contribution towards Tumah Tahara. All that's going to be explained in just a moment. Veloteshev ela nekeva yemei tumah v'yemei tara shafilu zachar hov nekeva ba'ade lo b'tzira yemei tumah v'yemei tara de nekeva sha'arei shal zachar muvlaim b'toch shal nekeva. And Rashi over here gives us the principle. Anytime you have multiples that are being born and it's a boy and a girl, she's going to have yemei tumah yemei tara of 1466. And Rashi points out over here, even if the other one's a male, that's not going to diminish from the 1466 for having had a female. Now Rashi back in the Mishnah said, what if a viable baby was a zachar? So now, because a sandal is for sure a baby, and we don't know its gender, now it becomes a consideration, a significant consideration. So now we don't know what the sandal is, male or female. There's a possibility that the sandal is a female. So therefore, 14 days of Yimei Tumah, she and her husband are not going to be getting the 66 days of Yimei Tara, because we don't know for sure that the sandal is a female. It's only a possibility. So it will come out to be a total of 14 days of Yimei Tumah and 26 days of Yimei Tara. If I went through all that a little too quickly, apologies, but that's our starting point for this morning in terms of a sandal. So a sandal is an undefined mass that comes out of the mother, which in of itself would have not represented a baby, but being that it was came together with another, i.e. it was twins. So therefore, the sandal is recognized as its own infant and would be matam of the mother tumas leida. The Gemara starts off with a description. Hamapel sandal. Tan Rabbanan. Sandal domo ladag shal yam. Mitchilasom. Vladhu, Elishinirsaf. So we start off with Brises. The Brises gives us a description of the sandal. The first description of a sandal is it looks like Dagshal Yam. Looks like a fish. It's flat. It's a flat mass that was clearly crushed by its twin. Looks like the tongue of a large ox. Okay, different descriptions in terms of what it looks like, but we all get the general idea. It looks like something that was pressed and flattened. Now, somewhat of a controversial point, and that is, do we need to see any definition whatsoever by the sandal? So the Gemara quotes Bishum Rabbeinu in the name of rabbis. That the sandal has to have suras panim, it has to have some facial definition. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rishmo Halacha, sandal serach suras panim. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yehuda that this is in fact the halacha. That to qualify as a sandal, it needs suras panim, facial features. I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yitzchak, sandal serach suras panim. Ve'afilu ma'achorav. Now in terms of the facial features, it could be anywhere within this mass. Because consider, as the Gemara is about to say, it was crushed. So therefore, the facial features could be where normally you would find facial features, somewhere toward the, I'd say the top, but being that it's a sandal, I'm not sure if we really know what the top and the bottom is. But in other words, even though it's not exactly where you expected to find it, it doesn't matter. By virtue of the fact that it was crushed, so therefore, the facial features can be found anywhere. Mashal Adam Shasasar Schaver Vehichzer Panel Vachorav. The Gemara gives a mashal, you slap your friend, and his face turns back. So in other words, through the blunt force, so what's going to end up happening is that the face is going to get relocated. Okay, so during the days of Rabbi Yannai, so they thought to themselves, well, if the sandal comes out with no facial recognition, so then it doesn't qualify as a vlad, and the mother's not metame tumas leida. That's what they wanted to say. Now, based on everything we just said, it's reasonable. Everything we just said works with the position that in order for a sandal to be a vlad, it must have facial recognition. So it sounds reasonable. Amar Lahem, however, when Rabbi Yannai heard this movement, so to say, that people want to be Matahir, right back then it must have been that this was an occurrence and not just a total anomaly. So Amar Lahem, so when Rabbi Yannai heard this movement, so Amar Lahem Rabbi Yannai, Ti Hartemus Avlados. You are Matahir of Vlad. Meaning, no, a sandal without facial recognition is a Vlad. And you want to be Matahir of Vlad? And you want to say that the mother is not Tamei Tumas Leida? Rav Yannai was not happy. So they turned to Rav Yannai and said, what about the Braisa that we learned? We opened up this morning with a Braisa. And the Braisa says that in order for a sandal to qualify as a vlad, it must have Tziras Panim. Amar Rav Bibi Barabaya, Amar Rav Yochanan, Me'iduso Shere Rabbi Nechunya, Nishnes Mishnazu. The Braisa comes to us via Rabbi Nechunya. It is not, even though the Braisa uses the word Rabuseinu, the Braisa is not giving us a popular viewpoint, a majority viewpoint. The Braisa is just a minority viewpoint of Rabbi Nechunya. It is certainly a tenable position, but it's not the accepted position. Rav Ziri says, you know, Rav beat me to the punch, meaning I knew that. I knew that this Rabbeinu Braisa is only Rav Nechunya. It just happens to be Rav Bibi was quicker than I was. Because I wasn't the only one sitting in shir. He and I were sitting in shir together in front of Rav Yochanan. When this was said over, again, this meaning that the Braisa of Rav Seinu is only Rav Nechonya. But because now when asked a question, he's the first one who responded, so he gets credit. And now every time we say it over, we say B'Shem Rav Bibi. And he's just simply lamenting that I knew it as well. I just didn't say quickly enough. Lama hiskiru sandal. The question. The question which I already foreshadowed back when in the beginning of Shir today. And that is, what is this whole discussion about sandal? Meaning, yes, we need to know whether or not it's a vlad. But why do we really need to know? Every time you have a sandal, you're going to have another viable baby that's being born at the same time. Sandal, by definition, means it's multiples. And so if there's twins, then the sandal obviously is a non-viable entity, and we're not sure, is it a vlad, is it not a vlad, facial features, no facial features. Okay, great discussion. But there's another baby coming out. And so with that other baby coming out, so then what do I need a sandal? Why do I even need to have this discussion? V'loin sandal she'enim o'vlad. The Gemara clearly and quickly articulates the question. So the Gemara says, well, look, if the female's being born with it, so then Hachinami, as Rashi said back in the Mishnah, but, you know, Rashi's basing off our Gemara that we just learned together. You know, so if the viable one was a female, so then we've already maxed out at 14 and 66. So you're right. Then there's not much of a discussion. So what we are discussing is where there was a male that was born as the viable. Now the male only operates with the numbers of 733. Now that we're qualifying the sandal as a Vlad, and because we don't know its gender, and it could be a female, so now we have to take into consideration that, A, the sandal's a Vlad, B, the Vlad is a female, and that's going to add to our Yemei Tuma. So instead of 17, 14 will be observed. Now, why would I have thought differently? So we're going to see this a couple times in our Masechta. We're seeing it in today's daf. We're going to see it a couple days from now as well. And the Gemara has a technique in which the gender can be determined by the parents. I know modern science is working on this, but before there was modern science, so back in the day, they had a technique. The technique was such that if the woman was Mazras Tchila, so then the child that comes out would be a male. If the man was Mazria Tchila, so then what would come out being a female. And so when you're having multiples, so it's the same act of conception. So one would think that, well, if the man was Mazria first, so then that would determine. And if the woman was Mazria first, that would determine, and it would determine both. So Midaha Zachar Hanami Zachar, Kamash Malan. Since this one's a Zachar, this one's also a Zachar, so the Chiddush is, no, that you can have a male and a female. It's rather remarkable, this line of the Gemara, because having multiples goes back many years. Right? Next week's Parsha, we're going to be discovering our first twins in the Torah. Next week's Parsha. So we're going to be discovering our first twins in the Torah. And even though that one came out male-male, but there are many times that you have multiples of male-female. And so it's kind of, it's curious that the Gemara says, the Havamina would have been that this one's male, that one's male. Meaning the Gemara doesn't know of the existence of multiples where one's a male and the other's a female. It's strange. It's a strange piece of Gemara. It's curious. It's hard to understand what the Havamina was. So the Gemara says, so what we also have to entertain is that the mazras of the husband and wife were simultaneous, which means then that gender is non-determinant, and therefore you can have one of them being a male and the other one being a female. Okay, that is all approach number one in terms of why is it significant to know that the sandal is a Vlad. So answer number one is, and this is going to be the easy answer, so everyone strap in. So answer number one is that because the viable child was a male, and so therefore the Yemei Tumah Yemei Tahara is 733. So on the chance now that the sandal is a female, so instead of being at 7 days, it's going to be 14 days of Tumah. Okay, that's answer number one. That's an easy answer. Here comes not an easy answer. The Gemara now, Davar Acher, so in our second suggestion of the Gemara, She'im Teila Nekeva, that we can even talk about with the sandal being significant, even if the viable baby was a female. So now, the viable baby was a female, so what was the problem? Problem is, 1466, she already maxed out, mom, already maxed out the number of days. What's the sandal going to contribute? Okay, so in our now second approach, there is going to be a contribution by the sandal. What would it be? So, Shim Taylor Nikabel Fnish Gesachama, Vasandalakh Shiazachama, Montchas Nidal, Rishon Vitchas Nidal Acharon. So the Gemara says, and let's now go through the following scenario. So on day one, right, you had multiples being born, one before Shkia, one after Shkia. Okay, it happens. It happens. But my first set of twins, it almost happened. Was excited about having children, was not excited about the prospect of having two brisim on two different days. Right. It almost happened. It didn't. Anyway, the scenario goes like this. The viable first baby, which was a female, was born on day one. The sandal came out after Shkia Sachama, so the sandal came out on day number two. And we have to entertain the possibility that the sandal now is a female. Right. Now what? Now for her, mom, so now counting is going to be not so simple. Because from day number one, we're going to count 80 days. So now her Yemei Tumah is over, right? Maybe. Because sandal number two came out on day number two, and sandal number two may have been a female. So then as she now goes counting from day number one, this is literally Sveika Diyuma. Okay? So now on day number one, on day number 81, from baby number one, she thinks to herself that she's now no longer in the Yemei Tumah Tahara of Leda. So now, if she were to bleed on day 81, what would that be considered? That would be her Pesach Nida, the first day of her Nidus. Right. Here's the problem. The problem is that, but there was a sandal born on day number two, and the sandal may have been a female. So now day 81 may not be day 81. Day 81 may be day 80 from baby number two. And so her bleeding over there represents nothing, meaning that that is Dam Tahor. And so therefore, on day 81, when I say 81, I mean from the first baby. So on day 81 when she bleeds, so she either may be a Nida, or that bleeding may be totally insignificant. Now, just to complicate matters even more, now go 8 days later. And she bled 8 days later. So is she a Zava? Maybe. Maybe. Because if the bleeding that occurred on day 7 was Dam Nida, so then we know Min HaTorah, Nida 7 days, and then any bleeding that occurs after that is Dam Ziva. Okay. However, if day 81 was just simply day 80, right, so that bleeding was totally insignificant, what then becomes now for the bleeding on day 8? That's the beginning of her Nida. So here we have a scenario where she's going to be bleeding on a day, and we literally do not know whether it's Dam Nida or Dam Ziva. Okay. If that was clear, that's amazing. And if that wasn't totally clear, so just play it back again. You hear it again, and eventually it'll penetrate. It penetrated me, so if I can get it, I believe anyone can. Sandal, the Gemara quotes the following Ditnan. Gabi Becharos Lamai Hilchasa. Okay, you're going to see sandal come out throughout Chas. Right? It happens to be that here in the third parak of Nida, this is the perfect place to describe it because we're talking about Tumas Leida. So here's a good opportunity to talk about sandal. But there are other places in Chas where sandal come up. And why? And that's what our Gemara is going to do. So we're going to get a quick tour of Chas and all the times that sandals come up. So, Gabi Becharos Lamai Hilchasa, Levacharav, Bechor Lanachal Avein, Bechor Lekoin. So very simply says the Gemara, look, if you have a sandal, so anything that comes after that is going to be a b'chol, is going to be a b'chol anachla. The second baby, the viable baby that comes after the sandal, so he's going to get pishnayim. Well, why isn't the sandal a consideration? We already learned this together, but let's repeat. Because when it comes for b'chol anachla, the qualification is that the father has to have emotional attachment to this baby. Right? Misha libo dova alav. So over here, when it comes to the sandal, there doesn't exist. It's emotional attachment, and so therefore the sandal doesn't qualify for b'chol anachla. What about pidgin aben b'chol lekohen? So there, it's just petarechem, meaning it's just a physiological reality that as long as something broke open the mother, the first one, that is the b'chol legabe kohen. And so therefore, even though the sandal is not viable, but still it was a vlad. And so therefore, the one that comes subsequently is not going to require pidgin aben. Okay. That is sandal as it relates to Bechor. Sandal de nangabe krisos on my hilchasa. Now, if you open up a mesech to krisos, you're going to find sandal over there as well. Sheim tele vlad derech dofin v'sandal derech rechem. Demaisin and karbon a sandal. So the Gemara says, let's say, again, sandal by definition means that it's twins. And so you're going to have two babies being born. But imagine the scenario in which the first baby comes out via cesarean, which was a viable baby. And then the second one, the sandal, comes out naturally. Now a woman only needs to bring a karban leida yoledes only for a natural birth, not for a cesarean. Oh, so now it's important to know that the sandal's a vlad, so that even though the viable baby came out via cesarean, but the sandal came out naturally, so therefore she's required to bring a karban.
Okay.
I'm not the right person to ask that question to. Okay. Ula Rabbi Shimon Damar Yosei Derech Dofen Vlad Ma'al Yehu Michael Amemar. Now, according to Rabbi Shimon says that you're chayv a karban even if the baby comes out via cesarean. So if that's true, so we don't have now a practical application, a nafkamina. Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Shim Teled Vlad Biyosa Oved Es Kochavim V'Sandal La'achash in his Gaira Demaisa Karban Asandal. So the Gemara constructs a halachic nafkamina, albeit it is going to be fantastic. It'll be a fantastic scenario in which she gave birth to the viable baby while she was still a goya, a nachriya. Then she immediately converts between baby number one, baby number two. I can't think of a better time for conversion, right? Do we have time for a conversion? Good. let's go. And then after Nizgaira, after she converts, so then she gives birth to the sandal. Now, even according Okay, I get you. Right, that's my answer right now. Details. Okay.
No, it makes sense because she doesn't want the child not to be Jewish.
Again, the Gemara, I love this discussion, but not now. The Gemara just simply wants to construct a scenario in which you can have a practical application of why the sandal is significantly important legabe carbon. And okay, so even according to Rabbi Shimon, we can come up with one. Okay, Amru Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Papa. Umi Aisina Lahani Shinuye. Now, these answers that we just gave, really? V'hatanya kishen yotzin en yotzin ela kruchen. Now, the Gemara over here is bothered by a physical reality, and that is that when the sandal comes out, the sandal comes out in conjunction with the viable baby. And again, not that I've seen this, not that I've read any medical records on this, but it makes sense because, again, what is a sandal? A sandal was crushed by its this will be the worst pun of the day, and you're probably going to repeat it to somebody else. This, it's womb mate. So in other words, I know it was awful, but in other words, it was crushed by the other baby inside. So the right, okay. And so when now that it was crushed by its by twin, so it's going to come out together. And so all these suggestions of one came out before the other, et cetera, et cetera. Like in theory, it's very nice, says the Gemara, but practically that's not what happens. Amra papa shbamina mikra karikle vlad lasanda apage umishachivle kapa reshe. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, even in the pragmatic, even in the reality that they come out together, they don't come out simultaneously. And so what the Gemara here is describing is that the sandal lies around the head of the fetus. Okay, and therefore, so gabe bechoros kigon shiyatsu derech rosheim, if by bechor, we're going to go back to the Mishnah bechor and bechoros, and they come out both in the natural position head first, the sandal kadem menafik. So there, just simply because of the way the sandal's wrapped around the viable fetus, so the sandal comes out first. And so therefore, the nafkaminas that we talked about in the Mishnah bechoros are still going to be in play. Gabe krisos shiyatsu derech margaloseim devlad kadem menafik. And when it comes to the Mishnah and krisos where we talked about where the nafkamina has to be where first the viable baby comes out, then the sandal comes out. Oh, so there we could be talking about a scenario where they come out breech, where now the viable baby is coming out feet first. So now the viable baby is coming out first, and then the sandal wrapped around the head is going to be coming out second. Okay. Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei de Rabbi Amar Afilu Tema Mitzum Samim. You can even give a different approach, says Rav Huna bar Tachlifa. They come out mitzum samim exactly at the same time. Ve'ipuch shmaitata. And what we'll do is we'll just flip it around. Gabe b'chor shiyatsu derech margalo seyem v'lad yis b'chayusa sarich v'lo nafil. Sandal deleis b'chayusa sharik v'nafik. So the Gemara over here says, we could say like this, that when it comes to the Mishnah and Krisus, where we need the viable baby to come out first, so they're coming out breech, and because because the Vlad has life, meaning the viable baby has life in it, sarchvelo nafik. So it resists coming out, and it's gonna delay in coming out. But the sandal, of course, which is a lifeless entity, so it's sharik. It's just simply gonna slide right out. It's sharik v'nafik. Gabi krisus shiyatsu derech rosheim, and by krisus we can now flip the babies around, where now they're coming out head first. Vladis bechayusa mid denafik reshe havileida sandal denafik rube. And over here, in terms of qualifying which one was born when, even if they're coming out simultaneously, halachically it didn't come out at the same time. Why? Because here's how halacha views birth. If you have a viable baby coming out of the mother and it comes out in the natural normal position head down, so when is legally speaking, when is leida? When the head comes out. And by the way, you don't even need the head. Just the majority, just the rope, just the forehead. Once you have the crowning of the baby, so then that is legally considered a birth. And if I remember correctly, I'm just going back on memory, I don't even think you need the whole forehead. You just simply need the majority of the forehead. In any event, so when it comes to the viable baby, so when is its legal birth? The moment it crowned. When it comes to the sandal, so it doesn't have a head. It's a crushed fetus. So when is its legal birth? The majority of it needs to emerge. Oh, so very good. So now we can just simply look at the two of them coming out simultaneously, head first, and halachically, they're not born at the same time. Okay.
Good question. Sometimes it's a genetic deformity, or is it physical damage by the roommate?
The Gemara earlier said that it was damaged by its roommate.
So genetically, it was okay up until before being cut.
I'm not comfortable speaking about the genetics. I don't know, but in other words, the Gemara says very clearly.
It wasn't a genetic defect. No.
It was crushed. Yeah. It was crushed. That's what the Gemara said earlier. Okay, Shilya Bevayis Abayis Tamei. Okay, our topic now is going to revolve around Shilya. We are up to the next Mishnah on Chavav Amin Aleph, and we're talking here about a afterbirth. Okay, so after baby's born, so what comes out is the afterbirth, and as far as the afterbirth is concerned, so the Chachamim knew, obviously, that provided nutrition and food for the baby, but it's just an afterbirth. Ancient customs of eating the afterbirth, right? You heard of such stories being told. The mother eating the afterbirth.
Oh wow!
Yeah, no, you've heard of it. Okay, I know. Right. Okay. Sorry for bringing that up. I should have stuck while I was ahead with Wumi. That would have been enough for today. Yeah. Okay. So as far as the afterbirth is concerned, so the Chachamim knew it wasn't a baby. It's biological matter, but it's not Tamei Tumas Meis. It's not the remains. It's not human remains.
It's not even.
Okay, so Shalya Bevayis Habayis Tamei. Now, the Mishnah over here, even though I know we're learning Masechta Nida and we're talking about Tumas Tahara, and it's true that we're talking in this Mishnah about Tumas Tahara, but we're really talking about Tumas Meis. Okay. And so the question on the table in the Mishnah is that it's dealing with is, as it relates to finding a shilya in a house. So the shilya is not going to give off tumas meis. That's a given. We know that. But there must have been a baby here. There must have been the remains of a baby. Now, granted, by the way, we don't know where it is, and there's no evidence of it, because if the baby's here, if the remains of the baby were here, so then there obviously wouldn't be a discussion. The reason why we're discussing right now is because all we know for sure is that mother miscarried in the house. We do see the afterbirth. We don't know where the baby is. So in terms of constructing a scenario, what is the scenario we're going to construct? So it's a machlokus here in the Mishnah. So the Tanakhama's position is that here's the scenario that we're going to construct. Lo shal shiyo vlad, lo shein shiyo below vlad. So the Tanakhama's viewpoint is very simple. There was a vlad. I don't know where it is right now. And I can come up with many scenarios on how it was lost. It was dragged away by a wild animal, right? It doesn't even need a wild animal. A weasel dragged it away. Whatever happened, but it was in the house. Now, being that it was in the house, so what does that mean? Anything under the roof of the house is now going to be Tamei Tumas Meis, because this is classic Ohel. So we're going to now gauge and judge that everything in the house is now going to be Tamei, because it shared a roof with Tumas Meis, with human remains. That's the Tanakhama's viewpoint. Rabbi Shimon says no. Rabbi Shimon Omer Nima Kavlada Shelo Yatsa. Rabbi Shimon says, I'm going to give you another scenario of what happened. What happened was is that the fetus inside disintegrated, liquefied, and it came out with all the biological juices that came out with it. So now what do we say halachically regarding the disintegrated fetus? See Rashi over here, Nima Kavlad, Venasa Dam. So basically it turned into blood and other biological liquids, but just let's right now call it just blood. Vinisar v'dam aleda, and it gets mixed in with the blood of birth. And Rashi says ubatal barov. And here we have an interesting halachic phenomena that we're going to say bittal. That's not interesting. We say bittal all the time, but here we're saying bittal as it relates to tuma and tahara. Even though this is a topic of tuma tahara, we're still going to invoke the principle of bittal. And because the majority of what comes out of her is non-human remains, meaning it's just simply the blood of childbirth, and this the remains of the fetus is coming out together with it in liquid state, in dam state, getting mixed up with the other dam, so bittul barov, and so therefore the house is not tamei. So we have over here a fundamental machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon vis-a-vis. I see the afterbirth in the house. I don't know what happened with the fetus. What is the most probable scenario that occurred? It may be. First of all, that Shitas Rabbi Huda, that Min Bemino and Abato. So, I mean, it's a good question, but that Shitas Rabbi Huda, this is Rabbi Shimon. So it could be that Rabbi Shimon argues on that position, but okay, so it's a good point. Tana Rabban, the Gemara, quotes the following Braisa. Shilya Tchilasa Dom L'Chut Shel Erev. That when it comes to the embryo, sorry, afterbirth. We're talking about the afterbirth. Shulya tchilas adam lechut shel eruv. So the afterbirth starts to look like a thread of eruv. Remember, we talked just the other day, shasi ve'eruv, on the loom. So you have the horizontal threads, you have the vertical threads, the horizontal ones are the thicker ones. So originally, at the beginning of the formation of the afterbirth, so it looks like the thread of eruv. V'sof adama ke turmus, and then it starts to look like some sort of bean or pod. V'chalula ke chatzotzros, hollow like a horn. V'ein shulya p'chusa mitefach. Now, in order for it halachically to qualify as a shulya, it must be the minimum size of a tefach. Okay, halacha. Halacha and shiurim. We know every time a shiur is mentioned, where is that coming from? So that's halacha l'moshe mesina. So here, to qualify as a shulya, so it must be a tefach. Which means that even though it may look like a shulya, but if it's less than a tefach halachically, it doesn't qualify as a shulya. And then we don't have to make these arguments of, well, there must have been a baby there. Another analogy of what a shulya would look like: it looks like the intestines of a chicken, the small intestines of a chicken. Okay. Tanya Rabbi Yoshi Aziri de Min Chavrai Chamisha Shirim Tefach Ve'Elohein. And now we get a nice summary over here of those things in halacha where the shear is a tefach. Tefach is the linear measurement, where basically if you make a fist from one knuckle to the other knuckle, from your first to your fourth, it's approximately 4 inches, somewhere in American measurement of 3 to 4 inches. So there are in halacha a number of things that have a tefach requirement. Now the list over here is going to be capped at 5. Okay, you can probably come up with more than 5, and don't worry because the Gemara will as well. And then if there is more than 5, so then why is the list over here a list of 5? Okay, this is, as they would say, classic Gemara, where the Gemara is going to explain why it is that this list is an exclusive list of 5, and what makes the cut and what does not make the cut. So, Chamisha Shirim Tefach Ve'Elohein, Shul Yishofer Shedra Dofen Sukkah, Ve'ha Ezov. So the 5 are the afterbirth, a shofar, Shedra, spinal cord. We are spinal cord, a spinal column, but we're not talking about a human. We're talking about a lulav. Okay, we're going to come back to. We're going to go through all 5 of these: the dofen sukkah, the wall of the sukkah, and the azov. Okay, so these are the 5 to which the Gemara says shulya hadamar. Now, as far as shulya is concerned, good. So it being a tefach, that's our sugya. The reason why this whole sugya comes up over here is because shulya is number 1 on the list. Shofar d'tanya kami yeshir, shofar pirush Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel k'dei shiachzen b'yado v'yirena, lekan ulekan, the shear of a shofar. Minimum shear of a shofar is that it fits into your hand and a little bit escapes from both sides of your fist as you're holding it. I know it's a little bit funny. It comes out that the shear of a shofar is a little bit more than a tefach. But,
at least a
tefach. Right. But the tefach is what's gauging its shear. That may be a good way to say it. May not be, but Tefach Shedra Ma'id Amar Parnach Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shedra Shulut Tzarech Sheyeh Yotze Ben Hadas Tefach. The Shedra of the Lulav has to be above the Hadasim by a Tefach. Just to give a little more detail over here with this particular halacha, so we know, third parak of Sukkah, a description of the Dalminim, so we know that the Lulav has to be taller than the Hadasim and the Aravos. The Mishnah tells us that. And we also know that the Lulav has to be a Tefach higher than the Hadasim and the Aravos. That we know as well. But even there, you can even go deeper, dive deeper into that halacha. Because when we say the lulav has to be taller, are we talking about the spine of the lulav needs to be taller? Or are we talking about the leaves of the lulav being taller? So if you have any familiarity with the lulav, which I'm sure you do, so you know that the spine goes up, but then the spine comes to an end, and the two top leaves, and all the other leaves as well, are heading in an upward direction. So the truth of the matter is that the leaves themselves are significantly long. And so this halacha, that the tefach of the lulav has to be higher. Does that mean that the leaves of the lulav have to be higher? Or is that going on the actual shedra that has to be higher? So the Rav Yochanan in the Gemara Sukkah over there says the shedra. It's the backbone of the lulav that has to be higher by a tefach.
Higher than
the hadassim and the aravos. Dofen.
Okay, very good.
For the lulav, the shedra should be above the hadassim by one tefach, or the
The Shedra has to be above the Hadas Minaravas by Tefach.
That's a minimum?
That's a minimum. Obviously, right, most of our Lulavim are significantly taller. This is not an issue. Okay. Dofen Sukkah.
Not the top. From the Shedra, the spine.
No. In other words, everything is being held at the same plane from the bottom,
right,
and then going up. So the Hadassim and the Ravas are going to be 3 tefachim minimum,
right,
and then the lulav has to be a tefach above that.
The Shedra.
And now we're qualifying. It's the Shedra, correct? So the dofen sukkah, the tanya shtaim kiochazam shishis afilo tefach. Now, as far as the tefach legabi sukkah, so we're all familiar. This is the first perek of sukkah, first and second, but in terms of dimensions, really more the first perek of sukkah. So the halacha by sukkah is, sukkah has to be 3 walls, but even when we say 3 walls, we don't really mean 3 walls. We mean 3 walls-ish. So the 2 walls have to be constructed as full walls, but the third wall only has to be a tefach. In terms of how to position that third wall, I send you to the first parak of sukkah, where there's a detailed discussion in terms of how to position that third wall. Anyway, Ezov didni Rabbi Chiya, Ezov tefach. The Azov, that's the branch that you're holding, the hyssop branch that you're holding when dipping it into the solution of the paraduma and the Mayim Chaim and sprinkling on the person. So these branches have to be how long? Minimum a tefach. Am Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Darishila Ish Kfar Timrasa, Tlas Masnitsa Vatachi Shmaisasa. So if you take a look at these 5 and you want to organize it even better, so it comes out to 3 and 2. 3 are Mishnayos or Braisos, Tana Idik, and 2 are Shmaitata, Amora Idik. Okay, I didn't say that well, but you understand, from the Amorayim. Okay, Shi'ura Tefach Tarte. So the Gemara says, Chadihi. So the Gemara says, what are you saying? Go back over the list, look over the list again. That's not true. Of the list, only one is only one is from the Amoraim, notably the Shedra of the Lulav. The rest of them are all coming from either Mishnayos or Braisos, Tana Idik. So what do you mean 3 and 2? You're wrong. It's not 3 and 2. It's 4 and 1. So Amar Rabbi Chiya Ezov Tofach. So the Gemara says, okay. So on the last one of the Ezov, we originally had it as Ditni Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya taught a Braisa. We're gonna make a small editing. It's not Ditni Rabbi Chiya, it's going to be Amar Rabbi Chiya. Significant. Because if he was quoting a Braisa, so that was part of the Mesorah, Torah Shabbat Peh. And Braisas were passed down tradition from generation to generation. And the Tanayim, you know, put it on paper. The later Tanayim, more so. But you understand, they're part of the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat Peh. When an Amara is making a statement, so what the Amara is doing now is he's trying to either clarify or explain. So instead of saying Tani Rabbi Chiya, now Amar Rabbi Chiya. So even though it's the same person, really interesting, even though it's the same person, but he's not saying it via Tanayim, but rather he's saying it as an Amora would say it, meaning clarification, qualification. Okay, so there's our list, 5 halachas throughout Shas of a Tefach. Furthermore, the further breakdown of the 5, where it comes down to 3 and 2, 3 from Tanayim, 2 from Amorayim, we're good, right? No, we're not good. Because what's going to come out now in the Gemara is that there's a lot more out there of a Tefach. And it's such a funny list. It's a great list. But it's limited. So Visu Lake of the Gemara says, I understand, Vayika Tefach al Rum Tefach, Meruba Mevi Zatumah, Vachotis Bifnei Atumah. So first of all, in terms of the very basics of Tumas Ohel, how much of a roof do you need in order to conduct Tumah for anything that's sharing the roof? What is the base minimum size of a roof in which it's going to stop the tumah from going up and then basically resend the tumah down? So it has to be a square tefach. And on top of that, the airspace between the tumah and the roof has to be a minimum of a tefach. So the Gemara says, and why didn't that make the list? Obviously, that's another halach and tefach. So tefach kamrina, tefach al tefach velo kamrina. So the Gemara says, because that's two-dimensional. And our list is limited to only linear measurements, one dimensions. Okay. V'ha'ika, the Gemara says, what about Evan Yotzi min ha'tanor, Tefach min ha'kira shelosh etzba'os, Chibor. So the Gemara talks now about the handles of the oven. Okay, quick description of their ovens. In the good old days, so their ovens were boxes made up of earthenware. and they were all portable. So it's like a grill, but A, there's no gas, and B, everything was self-contained. So you just simply picked it up and you moved it. How'd you pick up the oven? So there were handles on the sides of the oven, and so therefore you picked it up and you moved it from one location to the other location. Sometimes it was in the house, sometimes it was outside the house, and there are different types of ovens. This is where I can, you know, really just get lost in details. There's the Tanur, there's the Kira, right? Tanur's larger, Kira smaller. Rashi over here gives some detail in terms of the difference between Tanur and Kira. I encourage you to look at the Rashi over here. The Rashi over here is somewhat at odds with Rashi and Shabbos in terms of the true definition of a Tanur and true definition of a Kira. But again, let's just stay with the main point the Gemara wants to make over here. The halakha goes like this, that a Tanur, in order for a handle to be considered a yad of the oven, so then it needs to be a tefach. And as far as the Kira is concerned, which is a smaller apparatus, so then the handle is only three etzbaos. Now, halachically, what difference does it make? So here's what we know. An oven made up of earthenware is only going to be metame mitocho, only from its interior. But once tumah's in the interior, now the oven in total is now going to be tame, including the handle, as long as the handle qualifies as a handle. Well, when is the handle going to be qualified as a handle? Yeah. If it's a tefach. If it's more than a tefach, it's not going to functionally work. And they're going to cut it down. And so therefore, the handle of an oven only will have the halachic designation of a yad of a handle only when it's a tefach. There's another halacha over there when it comes to tefach. So kikam in hecha debati mitefach lo chazei, avahach koshek in debati mitefach yad, tanner hu. So the Gemara says, this didn't make a list because I'll tell you why. Because over here, as we're talking about the handle of an oven, so the tefach is a maximum. Meaning, let's say the handle was half a tefach. Would that serve as a handle? Sure. What about a quarter of a tefach? That also serves as a handle. Meaning, up to a tefach is that Mishnah in Kalim as it's describing the handle of an oven. But anything less than that would, of course, also serve as a tefach. The only point the Mishnah wants to make is that when it's greater than a tefach, it simply is not functionally serving as a handle. The ha'ika, so the Gemara says, I know another halacha as it relates to tefach, tenuri benos tefach, ovens of young girls. So I remember as a kid, there was, advertised, there was these ovens that the girls used to play with. So the still out there, huh? Okay. it's not a new item. It goes back to the time of the Gemara. In the Gemara, they had also these very small compact ovens that were used by young girls. Tanur benos tefach detanya. And here we are going to be learning together another Mishnah in Kalim. Our second Mishnah in Kalim today. Tanur tchilaso arba. In terms of the base minimum height of an oven, it must be four tefachim. Vishayar of dala divrei Rabbi Meir. And in terms of, let's say it was larger and it broke, you still need a remains of four tefachim height in order for the oven to qualify as an oven. That's all the shita of Rav Meir. V'chachamim omrim ba'medvar ma'morim b'gadol ava b'katan t'chilasa kol shehu mishetigmar melachto v'shira b'ruba. And the chachamim disagree. Four tefachim, no four tefachim. In other words, in terms of the maximum height, a tefach. Not maximum. In terms of the, sorry. Just the opposite. The base minimum height of an oven, a tefach. Now, I know you didn't hear the word tefach. What you heard is a kol shehu, but just wait one moment, because that kol shehu is going to be a tefach. And in terms of, let's say, a broke, as long as we have the majority of a kol shehu, so that also functions as an oven. The kama kol shehu, amar rabbi yanai tefach, shekein osin tanuri benos tefach. So the and in terms of a kol shehu of the Mishnah and Kalim, as to the opinion of the Chachamim, what is a tefach? A tefach is, I'm sorry, what is the kol shehu of that Mishnah? The kol shehu is a tefach. Okay, so again now, another halacha as it relates to tefach, the base minimum height of an oven to qualify as an oven. Now, beplukta lo kamayri, so the Gemara says, you know why this didn't make the list? Because there's a machlokas on this matter. Meaning we just learned the Mishnah together. Machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda says base minimum of four tefachim. The Chachamim say one tefach. So it's a machlokas, and the Mishnah just wanted to give us a list that is an unqualified, undisputed list. And so this is a subject to machlokis, doesn't make the cut. So the Gemara says, okay, perfect. Now that we're here, we can now give another explanation why the oven handle is not going to make the list as well. The oven handle is controversial. So Amar Rav Yehuda lo Amar Tefach Elam and a Tanur Ulekoso. So because Rav Yehuda says like this, the only time that the handle is capped at a tefach is only when the handle is facing the wall, right? Back in the good old days, and this is something we can all relate to. When furnishing your home, so you want room in the house. So this is now interior designing. Now, everyone here knows I'm not the interior designer, but you want to create space in the house. And so therefore, what you want to do is you want to take the utensils and move them and push them as close to the wall as possible. So when we're saying that the handle of an oven is capped at a tefach, Rav Yehuda says that's only for the handles that are close to the walls, right, adjacent to the walls. Those handles are capped at a tefach. But any other handles, they could be as long as you want. So this is the sheet of Rav Yehuda, obviously disagreeing with the Tanakama. It's a machlokas now. That's why it didn't make the cut. Va'ika mazgeres tefach. Now, what about the mazgeres, right? The rim that goes around the shulchan and the base of Mikdash. So the mazgeres is a tefach. And this, too, takes us back to the first parak of Sukkah, where the Gemara discusses this in more detail. So, b'dechtivan lo kamari. The Gemara says, you know why it didn't make the list? Because that's a pasuk in the Torah. The list of five that we're talking about is Torah Sheba Peh, not Torah Sheba Chsav. Ve'aika kapares tefach. So the Gemara says, what about the kapares? The cover of the Aron? We're there. It's not a pasuk in the Torah that tells us that the kapares is a tefach. It is, we learn it via limudim and drushas. Again, go back to the first parak of Sukkah, where you're going to see all the drushas over there. And it's a tefach. And why isn't that in the list? Because Shem lo kamari. So again, the Gemara makes another qualification. Now that's talking about kachim. The Mishnah over there is not describing those things that are subject to kachim. V'ha'ika adai l'korshi rachva tefach. So the Gemara says, I know of another halacha as it relates to tefach, and that is mavui. The first parak of Erevin, discussing the halachas of a mavui. And not to go through, not to give a crash course in Erevin right now. I'll just simply say this. In order to carry in a mavui, so it needs a heker on the fourth wall, because there is no fourth wall. The mavui is open to Rishus HaRabim. So you want to carry in a mavui, so you need a heker at the entrance. What serves as a heker? Either a lechi or a korah. We're right now talking about the korah. That is a horizontal beam that goes from one end of the mavui to the other end of the mavui. What is the dimensions of the korah? So, let's say, that also is discussed as a halacha. And the halacha is, it must be a tefach wide. That's the halacha as it relates to korah. And so, why isn't that in the list? We should be adding that. B'durabban lo kamari. The halachas of korah is a din durabbanan. Midaraisa, you're allowed to carry in a mavui. The mavui's got three walls around it. It's a rishus hayachid. The chachamim are the ones who demanded this korah, and so therefore it's a din durabbanan, and the list of five are not going over dinei durabbanan. Ela b'dechsivan, sorry, dai l'korshi yirachmat b'durabban lo kamari. Ela b'dechsivan v'lo mefarshi shirayu. The only thing that made the list is those things that are min haTorah, but the Torah never told us what the shear is, and so therefore that is the heading, the title, so to say, of the list of five things that are mentioned. Okay. Yasser Rav Yisrael Barshmol Barmar Tekame Derev Ganav Yasser Vikamer Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Kol Shosh Yamim Marishonim Tolim Es Hashilya Bevlad. Okay. What if now there's a delay, there's an interval of time between the afterbirth and the Vlad? Meaning, normally what happens is that in a natural and normal birth, so the baby comes out, and then, shortly thereafter, so then you have the afterbirth. Okay, the afterbirth is usually immediately after birth. However, the Gemara now is going to be discussing what if there's a delay, significant delay. So, anything greater than 3 days. So now, what's the concern? The concern would be that this afterbirth, it was for a different baby. And so, therefore, I cannot automatically assume that that afterbirth is connected to this baby. And that means to say that if the delay is so great, it's greater than 3 days, so then we have to concern ourselves with the fact that this is going to be an afterbirth representing a different baby. And now, she already gave birth, so in terms of Tumas Leida, so we're there already, so we could talk about right, male versus female. Mm-hmm. We could also talk about in terms of when to start counting her days of the Yemei Leida. Is it going to be one singular count from the time the baby was born? Or now that there's such a significant lag and delay between the baby being born and the afterbirth coming out, so maybe now we have to regard both days as the beginning of her Tumas Leida. And that obviously creates complication. So Amar Lehu Mi Amar Rav Hachiv Amar Rav Ina Vlad Mitakev Acher Chaver Klom. So the Gemara says, you know, I have another statement of Rav, and the other statement of Rav says that there is simply no delay between birth and afterbirth. They are contiguous to one another. And how can you tell me that we could be looking at a 3-day delay and still say that the afterbirth is connected to the birth? And meanwhile, Rav said very clearly that these events are, generally speaking, sequential events with no time delay in between. So Ishtik, that's a strong question. He didn't know how to answer. Maybe, he proposes an answer, there's going to be a difference whether the baby was a stillborn or the baby came out as a viable, healthy baby. So so good. You say that as a way of distinguishing within Rav. Beferish Amar Rav Hachi. Now I remember. That's exactly what Rav said. So if it's a stillbirth, so then there can and is a delay between the birth and the afterbirth. And up to 3 days, I could still assign that afterbirth to this birth if, in fact, what came out was non-viable. If, let's say, she gave birth, and afterwards the afterbirth came out, so there you can go even a longer period of time, and we're not concerned. Meaning, if it was a viable baby and the afterbirth came out, so the afterbirth can come out at any point in time afterwards, and we'll assume that that afterbirth is connected to this particular baby. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, Shmuel. We'll start with Shmuel and the students.